thank you all for coming. You know, at some point, I began to realize that things were so complicated that to try to keep track of all of the data was not something that I wanted to do. This happened before all of this. And so when I talk to you today about what I'm going to say to you today about why I'm grateful to you for helping us keep ArcLight alive and why I'd like you to talk to your friends or people that you know who could be helpful to us at building this community center, I'm going to say it just based on things that any child could say to you. Basically, guys, like, I really like it, right? Now, it's a little bit more complicated, but not that much more complicated. And the other aspects are that Dale Hartke demonstrated the courage that nobody else in the area was able to demonstrate. And for me, that was a really big deal. Yeah. Yeah. And the courage part was a really big deal for me, but behind all that courage was the skill, the foresight to create a building that could actually perform the function. Like, it's one thing to aspire to bring people together or to make it possible for us to courageously investigate the truth or to be in community and enjoy each other's company and presence and meals together and a sanctuary, a place for people who need to stay for a little while on their journey. But Dale, not only did he have the courage to make it available in a time when nobody else would, we had other facilities where we gathered, but he had built the facility. So, you know, and then, like, the question is, like, you know, how do you support a community? How do you, like, it's gonna take way more than just a building and a bunch of people showing up every so often to, like, talk about stuff. And so over the past year, we have sort of confronted one after the other what it is that makes a community work. And you know what it boils down to? Again, it's super simple. It boils down to people have to really care about each other. Because to talk about money, to talk about plans, to talk about principles, it's not what it's about. Because the question is, can you figure out how to get along with each other when stuff gets weird? So there's always going to be more work to do in that regard. All I can say is between the courage that Dale demonstrated, the skill and foresight, the intentional awareness, and I heard this from a woman who came up here and she was like, hey, Leland, you want to know the real backstory around this place? Like, 20 years ago, he had this sense that there was going to be a moment in time when we were going to need to have something like this. Am I wrong, Dale? See what I'm saying? That's like a really big deal. So he was right. We need ArcLight, and ArcLight needs you. And so please help us. We need to raise money for finishing the building, for certificate of occupancy, for ownership in perpetuity, and things like that. So if you have an idea about what we can do in that regard, feel free to approach me or Dale or just somebody else and see if you guys come up with a good idea. No, I just want to say one last thing about it before I introduce our next speaker. It's like one of those moments when after we did the David Martin presentation at Medeby and the cops showed up, there were hundreds of people there. The whole community was like, oh my God, what is happening? And you know, the wonderful proprietor of that location was like, I love what you guys are doing, but we have all these other things going on here that we can't put at risk. And it had been like years before that when I came here, when Dale was hosting fundraisers for the Christian Community Church, and my daughter was so delighted and proud to be with her friends putting together the dinner. And I said to him, What are you thinking? What are you thinking about for this? And this was before it was clear. What was long before it was clear. This is 5-6 years ago now. I was like, yeah, I think maybe a community center, maybe. But I heard him and I knew it was the right idea and I never forgot it. And like as soon as I heard from Elizabeth that it wasn't gonna be possible over there, it was like, Dale, you think we could do it here? He said, yes. So that's how this lives in me. That's like this young spirit that's just saying, this is courageous, this is fun, this is gutsy, let's do it. So that's where I'm at on ArcLight. There has been so many amazing things to have happened that are good as a result of the disaster of what is happening now, that after a while, I was like, yeah, I know, there's always this business about the cloud that has the silver lining, right? Everybody knows about the clouds that have silver linings. Yeah, and then there's, you know, so that people know what a silver lining is. But after enough silver linings started piling up, and some of you have heard me say this before because I say it a lot, I've begun to realize that there's the thing that is bringing us all together in order to make the difference necessary for the future of the world and the cosmos right now, the thing that is bringing us all together is more than a silver lining, it's a golden lining. And the next speaker I'm going to introduce you to is just such an example of the golden linings. You know, really, it's true. There's a certain history that Kat and I share that we didn't know about until we met each other in the context of activist work in New York City, putting together rallies, bringing together speakers. And it's not the subject of today's discussion, so I'll leave it aside. But it was really amazing to find her because the subject that she and I had both been preoccupied by is another one of those third rails of American politics. The thing you can't talk about because otherwise you'll get in a lot of trouble with your friends, your family, all the people, all the liberal friends of yours and stuff that, and you know, all the just like ordinary people, friends of yours that I think you understand, like the thing that we have this problem with right now, talking to people. Yeah, so we already had that in common. We didn't know each other, but I was like, you know what? I am really glad to have met a woman who has also been courageous to take on third rails that put the truth and what you're supposed to believe at odds. And you have to choose the right thing or you and I are probably not gonna be able to get along. Anyway, I'd like to introduce you to Kat McGuire.
Thank you, Leland. Thank you all so much. I'm really happy to be here. I'd like to be standing, but I have to have notes because I've spent the last 3 weeks organizing this big march, rally, and candlelight procession that we had yesterday in New York. It was very successful, and a good time was had by one and all, and today is supposed to be my day to just breathe. And instead, I'm up till 4:30 getting my notes together of thoughts I've been having for over a year now. So this is my first public presentation of these thoughts I've been having. I'm going to say this from an experiential position. I was asked to talk about what it is to be an organizer of this freedom movement in New York City. And I can only speak of it as having been a leftist since I was teething. So now I consider myself a leftist who left the left. I can no longer connect with my tribe, my peeps, who I've been with all of my adult life, because we've reached these lines in the sand, which I'm sure many of you know about. Very difficult. So I'd like to bring to this discussion my own learnings, having been an activist organizer in the freedom movement, and compare it to the left. I'm not suggesting that you all know the left necessarily, that's where you're coming from, but that's where I'm coming from. And I assume you're all progressive. Anybody who's in something like this, this is a pretty progressive place, so I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. And just give some understanding of what the grassroots freedom movement at this point in time is like. So as Leland was alluding to, I got inoculated by the truth movement. And so I already was on a path of separation from the left, lost many friends at that point in time. A lot of leftists now have started losing friends over COVID. I already experienced that, or not even leftist friends, just friends. I already experienced what it is to lose people very close to you by taking a principled stance on 9/11. So March 2020, when this pandemic came around, I could see exactly what that's all about, because 9/11 truth gave me a methodology, if you will, for understanding state crimes against democracy. Not just 9/11, the Kennedy assassination, all the false flags that we've had. And I've researched now back into history, World War I, World War II, and beyond. So I've really taken, and actually beyond that, into ancient history 10,000 years ago, having visited sites like Göbekli Tepe, Easter Island, in Peru and Bolivia, Egypt, and Malta, to try to understand the truth movement, if you will, from 10,000 years ago. So I'm very much connected to truth. And I, just as an aside, I think from my own family, we had a lot of secrets. Even on my mother's deathbed, another secret came out. So I feel like the lies are more corrosive than the truth. I'm very committed to truth. And I consider the freedom movement a sort of truth movement 2.0. So if you want to pull off a global coup d'etat, what are you going to do? Who do you most have to take out first in order to have a global coup d'etat? Well, you go to empire and you go to the people who have traditionally been anti-establishment, those who will most critique power. Well, who's that been all these years? Almost alone is the liberal left, and specifically the left, my tribe. But when I realized that my tribe doesn't get 9/11 false flags, they never got inoculated. So they didn't get COVID, of course. And to further it, they're just behind the eight ball on many things. It didn't start with, but we really saw it in full weaponized force with Trump derangement syndrome. That was 4 years of extreme histrionics, of getting people sort of a reverse inoculation, a psychosis. People were unhinged. It was unbelievable, and we had 4 years of that. And what I saw the Trump derangement syndrome as, a gateway mental virus that then metastasized into COVID derangement syndrome. And we all know what that is. And then from there, around the time of George Floyd, we got woke derangement syndrome. Now, that wasn't a new one. That has already been percolating for years in the re-education camps, AKA our universities. From there, we had to deal with what they call the big lie derangement syndrome. In other words, the quote, stolen election. And then finally, the latest one has been insurrection derangement syndrome. So if you look at the left and you saw whoever was full-blown had Trump derangement syndrome, down the line, Trump derangement syndrome. Then we saw COVID. Then we saw woke. Then, this is chronologically, then election, the stolen election, then the insurrection. So it's just like dominoes. The left kept being taken out. You could just predict who was going to believe what based on those who pretty much started at Trump derangement syndrome. I am not a Trump fan, but I actually loathe the man. But for me, it was the office of the presidency that was being attacked. So thank you. So starting with that Trump derangement syndrome, it was like dominoes. And there was no rational sense to it whatsoever, as we all know. For me, it felt like the whole world had become One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I was Jack Nicholson. The patients were all the left. And Nurse Ratched is Fauci. What is going on with my world? I knew things were really bad when a PhD friend of mine would not let me pet his dog because he was afraid he'd get COVID through the dog. I was like, wait a moment. This is the PhD in the room. Something is really wrong here. And that's when I started early on in the early 20s, getting a clue that this had nothing to do with how smart you are and an intellectual understanding. And I started thinking that there's we've heard of fourth generation weaponry. They have different anthrax, bio weapons, but there's also fourth gen mind control weaponry. And we know they've been using a lot of traditional weaponry against them. Applied behavior psychology has certainly been used in this pandemic. Programming, intense fear-mongering, and just the mass hypnotic trance, such that you would see at a mass scale in Cambodia or Rwanda. And throughout history, there have been times of mass trance. And that's what we're in now. But I would say, because we've seen those pretty much throughout history, that there's something new. I just felt that there was some new technology, and I kind of came up with my own theory of what might be happening beyond just propaganda on steroids. I call it the neutron bomb of the mind. So if any of you remember the nuclear war tip from the 70s, it was just an experiment, it was never used, but what that nuclear weapon did was it leveled all biological life, but all the infrastructure remained intact. So a military could just move in and boom, up and running, they have the infrastructure. Well, similarly, in my mind, I thought they have to surely have a weapon that goes after the brain in some way, such that the prefrontal cortex, that infrastructure, still remains intact. So you have economists who can rattle off statistics. You have PhDs who can write their dissertations. You have finance wonks who can crunch numbers. But so that critical brain analytical structure is still there, but common sense is completely wiped out. How could they do that? And yet that seems to be what's happened. Now, do I know what weapon they used? Who knows? Sometimes we don't know till 20 years later what they have been using on us all along, and it comes out. I believe that there's something there, and I think part of it can be found in what's known as TIs, targeted individuals. Who knows what a TI is? Oh, okay. TIs are called targeted individuals, and they operate, it's just regular people who get operated on in various ways. It's a form of attacking the mind. And the New York Times actually reported on, I read a story about 5 years ago, I'd been following it for a long time. There's, at that time, at least 10,000 TIs in the country. Who are they? Well, to do this kind of mind zapping, they're just basic guinea pigs. People who say, I hear voices. Well, we've always had people who are a little schizoid, but this is a little different. They have guinea pigs that they're working on. They used to kidnap them now. And do like zap their brain, and well, the whole MK Ultra was part of that. This is sort of a continuation of that. But then what they're also doing, the people that they're doing these zapping is, I don't really know what they're doing. This is conjecture, but it's too weird what's going on. Some of them are programmed to have nightmares every night at 2 p.m. or 2 a.m., for example. Or they hear voices. A lot of these shooters, I heard this voice that kept telling me I had to go shoot. So, you know, of these 10,000 people, a lot of them are guinea pigs, but you also have activists who they deactivate. I personally know about 9 people who claim they're TIs, and they can go after activists and deactivate them, target them. They have all manner of stuff. And then there's also sleeper TIs, people they've been working with, and then when they're ready to release them as a shooter or something. So this concept that I've been studying for a long time of electronic stalking and getting people to be this TI kind of laboratory, I think the HARP towers and Gwen towers are able to zap. So 5G, who knows? We don't know. I want to see the memo 20 years from now. But what you get is this bombing of the mind, some kind of mind zapping, and then you take them out in particular ways. So we know that it's possible to do data collection of individuals. All you need really is a credit card, but now with social media, you could probably get like at least 600 attributes about every one of you in this room. You know, I'm a certain age, I like this kind of music, I go to these kind of restaurants. So all these kind of demographics. Who knows Bluffdale? Who's heard of Bluffdale? Oh, okay. Bluffdale is a huge center in Utah that is collecting a gazillion terabytes of information in Utah. Every single CATV that's out there, every phone call, all the electronic data is going straight to Bluffdale. They're collecting all of it so they could probably reverse engineer and hit you with a pre-crime or something. But this is all being collected right now, highly unconstitutional. And so they have all this big data. I don't know if they really know how to sort through it. But from that, if they can target an individual, they can target an entire demographic. I've heard these brain people talk about it. Anybody who goes to Tessa Fights Robots, Tessa's back here, yay Tessa. Tessa's done a lot of work about mind control and where they're at now. I mean, and they're not just like gradually kind of learning. They're like going at a fast pace, and there's a lot of stuff. Talk to Tessa. She's really been studying a lot, doing some excellent research, and they've got all this big data, and they're really going after how can they subdue or activate or who knows what to a populace. So I believe in connection with this neutron brain, neutron bomb on the brain, that they not only just kind of do it to these individuals, but they've gone after an entire demographic, which I contend would be the liberal left. The whole group is gone wacko. It just does not make sense, even just with basic propaganda methods. So they're also not just neutralizing the left politically, but I believe also in other ways, just as social engineering. Back in the early 1900s, education had a big change because before it was really about critical thinking, but around the 1900s, some of the big foundations got together. It's very fascinating history. One of the women who was researching it later actually went crazy. She couldn't believe that they actually did this. So they researched of how can you best educate a populace so that they can work in factories and be functional, but you don't want them to be able to think too much. And so they really changed our whole education system. I think they used like the Prussian method or something, but people were not taught to critically think, at least in the public schools, and just regurgitate and be able to know how to do the basics. Well, I feel that has been done now with technology on steroids, is that they are able to not so much dumb down, but take out the parts that might be threatening. And so we have these worker bee technicians who are in total service to the technocratic state. Okay, so I could not relate to any of that. If that's what you're doing to my tribe, that's not me. I am a leftist who left the left. So what do I have left? Who am I left with here? Not much, I'll tell you. This has been a real learning experience because I'm a seasoned activist. I've been an organizing activist for at least 30 years, putting on conferences, going to rallies. And so I look at what we have. First of all, who are they? Well, Hillary said that they're deplorables. They're not really deplorables. I'd like to think of them as proto-yellow vests. Yellow vest people waiting to happen. They haven't quite gotten their consciousness yet. And deplorables might just be our N-word. I'm a proud deplorable. But that's still like negative programming. So I'm thinking more in terms of maybe using the word patriot. I wish I could, we're the freedom movement. I wish I could say I'm a freedomer, but there's no kind of word for it. So for the purposes of me talking right now, I'm gonna talk about patriots because a lot of people in the freedom movement refer to themselves as patriots. So so I can talk, I'm gonna refer to that. Now, there's a wide diversity of people in this movement, far wider than the left. The left is really homogenous in many ways. We've got Christians, Trumpers, parents with vaxxed children, conservatives, leftists who left the left, people of color in large numbers, especially given 70% of the African American population in the United States is not vaxxed. So when we go into communities of color in the boroughs of New York City, communities of color are just in very high numbers want our leaflets. And then we've got first responders. We have a whole varied community. Everything has its good side and its shadow side. Your winningest trait can be your Achilles heel. So there's difficulty in that because it's like a Tower of Babel, a cultural Tower of Babel. There's disconnect all over. How does a Trumper speak to a leftist who left the left? I remember when I first left the left around 9/11 and had to start looking around once I, like, oh, there's that door. Oh, let me open it. Noam Chomsky didn't tell me about that door to go down. So when I went down that door, oh, my goodness, lions and tigers and libertarians, oh my. It was just a very scary path for me to go down because libertarians and right-wing people, but that's where I was getting my data. I had to go down that path, and I became incredibly tolerant. It really demands a tolerance. And so what I see in this diversity of movement now is a Tower of Babel and cultural disconnect. But the positive side of that is that there is no orthodoxy. It's a cacophonous melange of incredible new different ideas bumping up against each other, people who have never interacted each other. And it's like herding cats, but it's also a rich source of innovation. So it's been very exciting, but it has its ups and downs, I'll tell you. And I have come to myself be a transpartisan to take the best of both and leave the rot of both behind. I've become very issues-based. As long as someone is not dysfunctional or an agent of the state, and you agree, for example, no vaccine mandates, come with me. You're on my side. I'm with you. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what your background is. That's my side on that issue. And we have to come together around issues more than anything else. So now when we look at this freedom movement versus the left, I, as an organizer, never realized what a luxury I have being in the left movement. The left has, over decades, developed crack grassroots organizers. Man, the left really knows how to do outreach. Being able to go door to door, hand out flyers, and be advocates on street corners. They're very disciplined at meetings and at marches. Oh, our marches, you have no idea how I've been trying to, guys, let's stay together. We don't want stragglers. These leftist marches, they're like communists or something. I mean, they really have a disciplined air about them, for better or for worse. CD, civil disobedience. So many people in the freedom movement right now are like, yeah, we're going to do CD and shut down FDR Drive. No, you're not going to do that. A primary facet of civil disobedience is to not target civilians. Excuse me, they just think, oh, we're gonna create havoc. Another primary aspect of civil disobedience is no violence. It has to be peaceful. So I've been putting that out over and over because to them it's just a blanket word, whereas the left knew that, like for the Republican National Convention, there were like 4 days of workshops to be able to know how to do CD. These people are like, yeah, we're gonna go out and do CD, and then it just breaks down, police come, this has happened. So it's just herding cats. But on the good side is that these patriots, you get they're neophytes, but you have a clean slate. So the good of that is you can kind of start at the bottom and work up. There's not a lot of factions, the Maoists versus the socialists, SWP. There's none of that. It's all, we just have to stop this. There's cultural differences, but there is alignment on what the main core issues are. And we have a lot of spirit. It's unbelievable. These people are not cynical and hardened and bitter. They haven't had decades of just becoming just really disenchanted with the possibilities. So there's a lot of spirit. Last week, we were at a Pfizer march, and it was pretty incredible. After the talks, we marched from one Pfizer office across town to another Pfizer office. We marched through rain, thunder, lightning, high winds, and hail. It was biblical. These people were still there to the very end. I'm like, I'm freezing. Can we kind of end? They were going strong. So these are the people we have who have not been beaten down through years of pessimism about the possibilities. So what is a hallmark? What are the hallmarks of these people? I landed in this new group, and I started seeing some patterns. So I found, in my mind, I organized it into 4 different patterns. There's a spiritual connection, there's common sense, there's people who have not been overly educated, and they're the people generally nice. So I'm gonna start with the spiritual. Okay, yeah. Yes. Thank you. So the left, in terms of spirituality, they have been suckled on this concept of God is dead. And religion segued into secular humanism and empirical materialism. There's a nihilism there, a belief in science and the material, and that is a straight path towards this technocratic state that they're trying to build. Whereas patriots, by and large, still have a spiritual connection. They have religious connections, and I don't care if it's Buddha, Allah, Yahweh, Grandmother Spider Woman, it doesn't matter. These are people who still want a connection to the spirit in some way. And that's why they had to shut down the churches, synagogues, and mosques during lockdown, because they know they're trying to destroy our spirit. Because we answer to a higher authority, and that's highly threatening to these technocrats who want to be the highest technological authority, taking us all the way to transhumanism. So our spiritual values and connection are probably one of the most important aspects that we can have, because it's inviolable. You cannot argue with the greater divine. We also have common sense. I talked about the left, who I think, how else to explain that they've just been totally mentally taken out and are like automatons. We are more connected to the whole concept of freedom. When I go to rallies, one of the things I say is, none of you are here because you heard about it on the media. You were propagandized by the media to come to one of these freedom rallies. You are here because you found out for yourself what is going on, and it made sense to you, and that's why you came to this rally. Nobody told you to. You're thinking for yourself. And every cell of our body has the great divine in it. So I tell them, when you are thinking for yourself, and every cell in your body has the great divine, in essence, you are channeling with the great divine. And so that is where your power comes from, is an ineffable understanding of what is going on in the universe, and these man-made technocrats are piddly, that nature's going to kick them away at some point. And people get that very clearly. We also have in our DNA, especially Americans, in our DNA we have democracy, the Constitution, First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights. Those are core. The left got taken out and those went by the wayside. The archetypical example is the ACLU. They were always for free speech. Now, what are they doing? Some of their main causes are about transgenderism, if you look up where they're doing much of their work. So this common sense ability is one of the things that unites us. The other aspect of not overly educated. As I said, the left, we've gone through several generations now of re-education camps in the universities. And the university is where the ideation starts. Please wrap up. Okay. Oh, I went over? Oh. Okay. All right, let me see how much I have. Yeah. The left has become more overeducated, so they're on screens more, they're in offices more. 10 minutes, okay. In offices more, they're more dependent on the state, be it government, foundations, corporate kind of handouts, whereas freedom people work with their hands. They're more outdoors oriented, they're more of the earth. You'll see them as roofers, construction workers, first responders. They're more entrepreneurial and resourceful. They're at the very heart of where their money's coming in. It's not a regular paycheck, which you can kind of sit back and UBI it. No, freedom people are much more right to the bone of the practicality of it all. So the last one that I will say is niceness. So what does that look like? I went to Washington for the January 6th protest, not because of Trump. I was there to protect our constitutional rights, the presidency, the election. I could not believe how nice everybody was. Now that sounds bizarre, but this is a million people and they were all really, really nice. I've been to hundreds of demonstrations. I had never really interacted around so many nice people. Now I am of down home people. I'm from rural Indiana. I grew up in a town of 900 people where I lived until I was 18 years old, and then went to college in Washington, D.C. And these people may have problems. They may be dysfunctional, but they're not cynical. And that's the problem with the left. They've just been despiritualized. There's a nihilism there that has this cynicism. And so the left wants to destroy. They invented this concept of hate speech. They want revolution. Whereas this new movement I'm in now is about obedience, law and order, traditional values and family, which when I was a left, I was like, oh, that's just patriarchal. That's passé. I could not believe when I was in Washington at the protest, I was actually going, USA, USA. In the past, that would have been antithetical to be cheering for empire. But now, it takes on a whole different meaning. Now I'm like, where are our values? Where is our Constitution? That's what USA is to me right now, especially when you have the left in bed with the intel agencies wanting war all over the world. Uh-uh. So it's a whole different way of being patriotic, which is a form of self-love. If you love your country, you love your home, you love yourself. And the left has become so full of just inner turmoil. And so we have this niceness. Now, a problem is that the freedom movement is in the crosshairs of government right now. The government eye on terrorists. President Biden said that they're domestic terrorist threats. And we have these January 6th right-wing terrorists. They are chomping at the bit to go after the health freedom movement as domestic terrorists. And that's because January 6th was just about the elections and the presidency. What the freedom movement is going after is their global coup d'etat. Their entire structure, they're using COVID, and that's what we're going after, and they know that we have the ability to just expose wide open the whole global coup d'etat. So we are definitely in the crosshairs, and there are many infiltrators in our movement from various strands. And the patriots are very naive. This is an example where niceness, are you telling me to get off? I have to leave. Let me see. All right, so they have a sense of, they want unity no matter what. I am close, I'm very close. So they can't see, I see a lot of things that they're, that they do, the decisions they make, because they're really nice people. But it doesn't make sense, some of the things they're doing. I would say 80% of them have no idea what COINTELPRO is. And so I've had to sort of like educate. And known infiltrators, I've seen MCs give the mic to speak. They know they're an infiltrator. So it's like, this doesn't make sense. So I came up with this concept, because I see it in a lot of different ways in this new movement I'm in. I call it do-gooder derangement syndrome. They're so nice that they don't understand that their niceness is being used to weaponize against them. And the state is taking advantage of this. And we need more political awareness. They're being educated, and we need more to have them understand their inner awareness. And yet there's a difficult dialectic here, a delicate balance between a head in the sand and not wanting to know, and a paralysis and a paranoia. And they don't have years of activism to know. And so a lot of what we see is reactive. Okay, I'm winding up here. And so they're doing reactiveness as opposed to figuring out solutions. That's where it's at right now, reacting, protesting, counter. Whereas all of you and many others are doing at an evolved level, doing parallel planning. And stop. Okay, so to shift the vibration, we need to really be doing more activism around what I call right-wing activism, more spiritual. And for every one of us who can do political and spiritual activism, we are worth 60,000 of every one of their walking brain dead. Every one of you is 60,000 of their walking brain dead. And we can win, because we will win overall, because we are stronger. Thank you.
On fire.
Thanks, guys. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm not used to microphones. Okay, so we're having a quick break right now, about 10 minutes, real quick. And then Larissa Davis, our artist, is going to speak about her beautiful artwork here. So have some snacks and be here in 10 minutes.